Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Episode 53, The Bed of Branwen. Hello, I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. Welcome to the 11th episode in the Saga of Branwen.
Brilliant. And before we start, let's have the contact details. If you'd like to leave us any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at CelticMythShow@gmail.com.
You can also leave us some voice feedback using the SpeakPipe widget on our website at CelticMythPodShow.com. We especially love hearing your voices. You can also contact us on social media.
You can find the show notes for this episode at CelticMythPodShow.com/Branwen Bed. Now, do we have any news and views?
Yes, we do. We've got more exciting archaeological news.
Really? Is this a discovery at the Stonehenge complex?
It is, actually, and it's amazing. A ring of large underground vertical shafts have been discovered by archaeologists near Stonehenge. Archaeologists think these shafts form the largest prehistoric monument ever discovered in Britain.
Wow.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. And experts believe that the 20 or more shafts may have served as a boundary to a sacred area connected to the Henge.
The pits surround the ancient monument of Durrington Walls, which is about 2 miles from Stonehenge. And they were discovered using remote sensing technology and sampling. Professor Gaffney of the University of Bradford said a proper excavation was required to determine the exact nature of the pits, but the team believed that they acted as a boundary, perhaps marking out Durrington Walls as a special place or emphasising the difference between Durrington Walls and Stonehenge. They think both had very different purposes.
I mean, these pits are huge, aren't they?
They are, and Durrington Walls was a place where we think the builders of Stonehenge actually lived and worked and celebrated.
Sure.
So it's kind of a huge complex. People only think about Stonehenge itself, but actually there's lots of other sites around it that all seem to be connected.
And Dr. Nick Snashall, National Trust archaeologist for the Stonehenge World Heritage Site, hailed this discovery as astonishing, and she said,
"As the place where builders of Stonehenge lived and feasted, Durrington Walls is key to unlocking the story of the wider Stonehenge landscape. This astonishing discovery offers new insights into the lives and beliefs of our Neolithic ancestors."
It's amazing that we're still finding new archaeology in that area. Stonehenge must be one of the most studied areas in the world. Yet with new technology and good fieldwork, there are many more discoveries every year. Hopefully one day we'll have the whole story of what places like Stonehenge were used for.
That would be amazing, wouldn't it? The other piece of information that I found as well is that archaeologists are now rethinking the tunnel they were going to put under the A303, which is the road that goes right past Stonehenge, because they think if they put a tunnel under there, there may be other things that we haven't discovered yet that could be destroyed.
Oh, that's interesting.
So hopefully they won't, because I think it might actually ruin the area having been there, but, you know. In some ways, it would be really sad if they answered all the questions, though. I quite like the mystery. And if you'd like to know more about this exciting discovery, you'll find the links to the articles about the discovery in the show notes at CelticMythPodShow/Branwen Bed.
So shall we start the story with a reminder of what happened last week?
Great idea.
It looked as though it was a fantastic job of work, and he knew that Bran would be well satisfied with the offering, and the thought did not please him. When the day came for the High King to take possession of the new house, and that at eventide when a great feast had been prepared, Evnission, son of Eoroswith, decided he would inspect the house. And Evnission pointed to the bag hanging on it and demanded,
"What is in this bag?"
"Flour, friend, for the bakers."
Then Evnission placed his hands on the bag and poked, prodded, and explored the contents of the sack. He realised immediately what the true contents were and groped for the warrior's head.
been punished enough. Surely the honour price for our losses have not been paid. Why does this boy favour my brothers and not come to me?
He could take it no longer.
Before all the gods, I make this confession. What I am about to do at this very hour is an unspeakable crime against my kindred.
Evnissian noticed that not one Welshman was among those being brought back to life, and he realised that the numbers of the Irish were being replenished every day, and the numbers of the Welsh were dwindling more and more with each passing moment. This was a war of his own making, and he had revelled in the joy of destruction that his plans had wrought. Now, however, he realised that his actions would cause the tide of war to flow over Bran, his brothers, his sister, and the warriors from the Island of the Mighty silently and with dark, uncaring eyes. So it was done. The great and wise head of Bran the Blessed was cut from his body with one stroke of a great sword. History does not record which of the seven men wielded the mighty blade that struck off the head of the High King, nor which of them placed it upon a silver platter. History does not record the tears that flowed as the gentle and wise head was cut from their brother and liege lord's body. As they carried it to its position upon a bench seat in the boat that they had acquired, none were overly surprised when Bran's deep brown eyes fluttered open, and his sad gaze went to each of those that sat in the boat as it rode the surf. Only when the boat was bobbing out on the sea beyond the ninth wave did Bran talk to his companions.
I am with you still, my brothers. I am your king, your brother, and your true companion. Although the cost has been great, the battle has been won, and I am with you still. Let us sail now back to the shores of Predraen. Surely home will bring something to ease the pain of our hearts.
Take me back to the Isle of the Druids. Let my tears fall upon Innes Mon.
Then let it be so.
Be at peace, sister. Sleep now.
Manawydan put his arm around Branwen's shoulders, and the deep peace of the ocean swept slowly over her. Taliesin played the sweet sleep strain upon his harp, and she drifted off into a deep and dreamless sleep. The journey passed in almost total silence, apart from the lapping of the waves and the lamentable cries of the seabirds. They made landfall on Innes Mon, and there they communed with the druids and took their advice. Even with all of their wisdom, though, Branwen was inconsolable. These seven princes of men were united in their grief and sailed down the coast to land at Aber Alaw in Talibolion to take their rest. Branwen stood on the strand and looked out over the ocean to where the shores of Ireland lay, and then she turned her back to the waters and looked out over the green fields of Anglesey of the Island of the Mighty. Her eyes, deep blue pools of pain, looked at each of the seven men before her. Memories of her son, her brothers, Bran and the twins, the two mighty armies, now crow food lying on the blood-soaked fields of Erin, flooded through her.
Woe is me. There is naught but woe within me. I should never have been born. Because of me, two great noble islands have become a wasteland.
She gave a great sigh, her heart broke in two, and she collapsed onto the ground, her life energies passing from her. Manawydan, Pryderi and the others wept over her long into the twilight. They carried her to Glan Alaw and dug a deep grave in which to bury the Irish queen. A four-sided grave was made for her, each side lined with one of the great iron sides of the shattered cauldron of rebirth. They laid her to rest in the centre, with all that she might need for her passage in the other world. All remembered her in words and in song, but none could think of anything to say to assuage the pain that ravaged their breasts in thick sobs. The seven nobles heart-grieved and knew that it was time for them to leave the comfort and wisdom of the druids behind them and return to the mainland. It was time that they began their journey to Harlech, as the mighty Bran had foretold. They packed their horses, placed the head of Bran with them, and slowly rode out of Innis Morn and on towards the fortified town of Caer an Arvon. The wind whistled tunelessly across the beaches and through the salt plains like the mournful voices of the dead. Their only warmth was the constant company of the head of their friend, the High King Bran, his wit and laughter warming their chill hearts. Now that their erstwhile king could no longer be High King of all the lands, they hoped still to see his son, the young Caradawg, crowned by what precious little remains of the tribes of Prydain. As the mighty walls of the Caer came into view, the seven men saw a huge multitude. A crowd of men, women, old folk and children coming towards them. Some riding, some on foot, and others being carried in carts behind pack horses. Manawydan held his hand up for them all to stop, and rode out to meet the column as it wound its way away from the Caer. He rode up to the front riders and he spoke to them, saying,
"You, have you any tidings of the Island of the Mighty? Can you tell us what has befallen the land?"
"We have no news, save the Caswallon of the line of Beli has overrun the Island of the Mighty. He has been crowned king in Llundain."
Manawydan looked over his shoulder at his friends standing by their horses and sitting in the cart containing the head of Bran. He wondered about Caradawg, the son of Bran, who must be a mighty and noble warrior by now. He turned back to the refugee.
"So tell me what has happened to Caradawg, the son of Bran. And what happened to the seven chiefs who were left with him in the island while we were away at war in Ireland?"
"Well, that is a strange story, my lord."
In a deeply wooded crest atop a hill of the Seven Knights, Caradawg and his companions were meeting for council. The horses were stabled, the pavilions erected, and they were all feasting at the long boarded trestle tables, when a cry of alarm went up from the sentries. Caradawg looked up from his meat and called to his friends.
"Ho there, what ails you, man?"
"I heard a noise, sir."
"A badger, no doubt."
"I would have known if it was a badger, sir. It was man-sized, it was."
"Well, did you see anyone, sentry?"
"No, sir, no one at all."
"Then I suggest you go back to your post, young man."
It was then that Caradawg saw a long sword float through the air and pierce the breast of Vodor, son of Ervich, before turning towards Hevaith the Tall and piercing his throat. These two nobles expired noisily, amid the hue and cry of the warriors as they leapt with their weapons drawn and searched the clearing for enemies. The sentries and small folk vanished from the trees, and those who had seen the flying sword screaming in terror at the otherworldly magic and the remainder running for the safety of their own skins.
"Here, Hlassar, stand with me. I can see no man or enemy, but I have seen its weapon floating upon the air."
"I saw that sword take Hevaith, but I can see it no longer."
His head swiveled this way and that, until he saw the sword wink into existence just before it disemboweled Idig, the son of Anaraug. Two blows were parried by Inig's strong shoulder before it disappeared from sight again. Hlassar ran for Inig, weaving his sword in front of him as a blind man weaves his staff upon the ground seeking safe passage, as he searched for the half-seen, visible, now invisible, murderous sword. Ilch Bonelich came to stand next to Caradawg, and the sword appeared right in front of him, from thin air, as if it had never been before it was there, thrusting at Ilch, who batted it away with his own sword. Caradawg spun round to face the sword, swinging his own longsword at the empty space where a body should have been. The point of the sword dropped, and it blinked out of existence again. Both men advanced warily, their swords ever seeking. Ilch was advancing next to Caradawg when Caradawg suddenly heard the most horrendous noise of bones breaking and guts spilling as a sword cleaved Ilch from breastbone to waist. He turned to face the cowardly attacker, only to see the blood-drenched sword turn away from him and disappear once more beneath a curtain of semi-translucent trees.
Pendaran, there seems to be magic at work here. Can your druid skills not help us?
This has the seeming of fey glamour, my lord. I am old, and my skills work against men, but not against the ever-living ones.
Then run for the trees, old man.
Now, cried Klassar, rushing forward as he saw the sword appear from under the cloak that was hiding it. Inig leapt forward with the brave warrior, and the two of them fenced for a while with the sword as it seemed to move between the worlds. With one savage thrust, Inig was impaled on the sword and breathed his last. Klassar was the last to die, the sword point burying itself in his throat and avoiding the infuriated Caradawg, seemingly at all costs. At a distance of 10 paces, the sword appeared again as Caradawg stood alone in the clearing. It saluted the brave son of Bran, dropped and disappeared for the last time. For a brief moment, the veil of glamour was slow to drop back onto the blade, and Caradawg caught a brief glimpse of a face and arm behind the blade. It was a face he recognised. A face belonging to a man he considered friend, and more than that, kinsman. And then it was gone, and Caradawg was once more alone in the clearing. He sank to his knees, grief and confusion flooding his body, and he cried out loud to the gods, to the stars above, and to the furthest shores, until there was not a sound left in him to cry, but that of his breaking heart, as the grief overtook him, and he laid down upon the moist grass beneath his feet. He was the third person to have died from grief on the Island of the Mighty. Caswallon of the House of Belimaur shook the cloak of concealment from his shoulders and looked down at his nephew, his kinsman. He'd not wished for Caradawg to die. The man was the son of his cousin, and if Bran returned from his wars in Ireland and somehow discovered what had happened, there would be no peace in Prydain, no peace at all. There would be nowhere to hide. He turned slowly and walked from the clearing, mounted his horse and returned to claim his crown on the white hill of Llundain. He failed to see the ancient druid, who was crouching down beside the huge bole of an ancient and long-dead tree. A tree who had once been home to 1,000 insects, 12 birds, and now was the last safe haven to one stubborn old druid.
I must pass on what I have seen here to the other druids. The High Council will know what to do about this. Oh, how my heart bleeds for the children of Hlir.
Manawydan, Pryderi and the others left the crowd of men on the road and continued their way to Harlech with heavy hearts. They made their way up to the rock where it had all started and sat themselves down, gazing over the wide, crystalline sea. This time there was no cheerful chatter between the brothers. There was no white raven climbing high into the clear blue sky, and there were no sails on the horizon bringing doom to both islands. They called for food and drink, and it was brought to them. There was meat and wine, bread and cheese, and all manner of wondrous foods. And as they ate in sorrowful silence, the sharp eyes of Manawydan, gazing out over the sparkling surface of the sea, spotted 3 bright white birds wheeling about each other in intricate spirals above their heads, their red eyes shining like rubies in the azure sky.
Look, my friends, up there, those birds!
I would not be so surprised, my brother. I suspect the kind-hearted Rhiannon has heard of our arrival here, and she may even have been watching for us.
Before Bran could say another word, the beautiful birds of Rhiannon began to sing, and they sang a song more beautiful than any other the companions had heard. And when they heard that harmony of song, every other melody seemed unlovely beside it. The song of the birds told a song of the sorrows of the land, of the deaths that were still so fresh in everybody's mind, and of the great beauty that was the lost soul of Branwen, piercing sadness and breathtaking grace. They were moved to tears once more. The birds seemed to be painting their interweaving patterns a great distance away from them, and yet their song was as clear as if they were in the sky just above their heads. The lines of the design made by their wings as they flew in such complex and repeated figures were as bright and distinct as the interwoven design of Bran's own raven heraldry. And the seven who returned stayed at Harlech and feasted on for 7 long years, always with the birds of Rhiannon singing to them. In song and in the shapes of their flight, those birds circled and wheeled, depicting each battle that they had taken part in and each victory that they had achieved. Each fresh new design and phrasing of the song brought back the memory of the tremendous losses they had suffered, of the men of Wales and the men of Ireland who had fallen, giving their lives, their sons and their fathers, back to the Great Mother. In our next episode, the saga of Branwen comes to an end with the assembly of the Wondrous Head.
Oh my goodness, that was so sad. I'd really love to go to Anglesey and visit the monument Branwen's bed. There's a link to it in the show notes if you'd like to know where it is.
Yeah, there's a picture there as well.
Mm.
And we're overdue a trip to Wales, so maybe it's something to consider when the world gets back to normal again.
Definitely, we'll have to think about that.
Wouldn't that be lovely?
Mm-hmm. Right, do we have anything else?
Well, we've had a review left for us on Apple Podcasts, and it's from Tara, and she says,
I feared this wonderful podcast had faded, so I was thrilled to see they're back. It's such great storytelling of the Celtic myths.
Thank you so much, Tara. It was great to hear from you.
Yes, we are still very much here. Thank you for your feedback, Tara. And also a big thank you to our supporters on Patreon.
And if you'd like to support our show and help us fund the essential costs of creating the podcast, please do visit us at patreon.com/Celtic Myth Podcast.
Yes, thank you. Every little helps us bring these shows to you.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode, and so it's time for some music. What have we got this time?
Well, have a listen to the beautiful and sad song about the difficult times we're living in. This song is called Paper Rainbow, and it's by George Nicholas and Canunus Rising. Full details will be in the show notes at CelticMythPodShow.com/Branwen Bed.
So settle back and enjoy the glorious music of Canunus Rising with Paper Rainbow, and we'll be back with you in the next episode.
So we wish you many blessings and say
Húlvár.
These four walls bring me down. No one here in my hometown. And I lose myself inside a song. Been on my own for too long. Comfort food, too much drink, clouds my mind so I don't think about heavy thoughts. Like pouring rain, can't watch the news, I'll go insane. Not until you fight for breath. You contemplate the truth of death with a look above, with eyes of fear. Your angels are right here at your side for you. They fight each and every day and night. A living light, a living love. Your angels from above. All God's children hope and pray. Future. future brings a brighter day. There's one thing that's bright and clear, that love is always me. Its toll, it plagues the mind and kills the soul. Only when we can't be near, all our loved ones held so dear, and lonely hearts, and young and old, now cherish time much more than gold. Oh, how good is it to see those angels on my TV, the bravest soul, the gift of life in our hour of need. Darkest strife. All God's children hope and pray. Future brings a brighter day. There's one thing that's bright and clear, that love is always near.
Been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. If you enjoyed listening to this show, please come and support us on Patreon at patreon.com/Celtic Myth Podcast.
We hope you'll stay tuned for the next episode. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us at CelticMythShow@gmail.com or come and chat to us on social media. All of the links are on our contact page on our website at CelticMythPodShow.com.
We'd also like to send out a big shout of thanks to Coolan's Hounds for our theme music, and that's available at sfhounds.com.
This show is a Celtic Myth Show production.